And now, the Talk of the Nation opinion page. After bubbling under the surface for the past year, race, as we just mentioned, has suddenly leaped to the forefront of the Democratic presidential campaign as Hillary and Bill Clinton try to clarify what they told largely white audiences about Martin Luther King Jr. and Barack Obama. The junior senator from Illinois walks a tightrope in his campaign with a foot on both sides of the racial divide. Obama knows he has to appeal to whites if he hopes to win, and hopes to do that without alienating African Americans. Joe Williams knows a little bit about running for president as a black man. In 1980, he ran for student body president in high school. Joseph Williams is now deputy chief of the D.C. Bureau of the Boston Globe. He joins us here today in Studio 3A. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, thank you.
And we want to hear from listeners in this segment as well. Do you see Obama's cross-racial facility as an asset or a source of conflict? Our number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. It's at npr.org/blogofthenation. So set the scene for us. 1980, I think most of us have forgotten that particular student body election.
It didn't make very many headlines, that's for sure. But back in semi-rural high school that I attended, just outside of the suburb of Chattanooga, Tennessee, mostly white student body, maybe about 1% of us were black. I was a football player, knew some people. They knew other people, and they thought I might make a good president.
More than a football. You were the captain of the football team.
Yeah, I was.
And you describe a not unfamiliar picture in the cafeteria of that high school where you say you were a proud member of the black table in the cafeteria.
Well, I mean, it's been in every experience I've had since elementary school. I've been in mostly white schools all my life. Every time in the cafeteria, all the black kids sit together. Books have been written about it. It was the same way in college, even in Harvard, which I was there for a brief fellowship for a while. And all the black kids sat together, and it was sort of a sign of racial solidarity. But it also was interesting was that it was largely unspoken. You didn't really have to ask. You just sort of did it.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you understood that to win election, you'd have to get a lot of white votes. You couldn't just depend on the guys at the black table.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's a mostly white school, and that's where the votes were.
And the difficulty, you said, and you were obviously making some allusions to the current situation faced by Barack Obama, is if you get up and make that speech in front of the assembly there, you do it in your voice. You speak well, as some people would say, and maybe from your high school days, boy, you speak well. In other words, you speak like a white guy.
Well, yeah, that's been a constant. And it's nothing that we haven't heard before. But getting up and talking in that voice is a kind of exposure that, even thinking about it now, it's a little bit uncomfortable, especially when you know that there are other black people looking at you.
Mm, and so you don't want to seem like a sellout either.
No, absolutely not. I mean, it's a very, very thin tightrope that you have to walk. And one of the things that I've been impressed by Obama is that he's been able to walk it very, very well and do it in such a manner that he avoids alienating both, which was something I probably couldn't do.
It turned out you didn't win your election.
Oh, no. 44 votes. I should have demanded a recount.
Well, before we understood how desperately political those things could be. But on the other hand, you came to the conclusion that maybe your high school class that year in 1980 wasn't ready for a black president. And it's a question a lot of people are asking about the country these days.
Well, it's true. And even then, I could sort of sense that it probably wasn't in the cards for a lot of different reasons. But now we hear talk about Senator Obama being able to break through a barrier that no one has broken through before. He's the first viable candidate, so-called, to win a major political event in the presidential campaign. He came close in the second major political event. But even this morning, and even as late as a week after the election, people are still talking about the fact that there seemed to be some disconnect between what the polls were saying would happen, what actually did happen in New Hampshire, and the so-called Bradley effect, which has been, it's had an impact on most statewide elections or most major elections involving an African-American candidate.
Referring to Tom Bradley, the former mayor of Los Angeles, who, if people had voted the way they told the pollsters they were going to vote, would have been governor of California.
Absolutely, absolutely. He would have won by at least a 10% margin, 10-point margin.
And this, you write about the mask that an African-American has to take, has to don when addressing a largely white audience. Tell us about that a little bit.
It's something that you know, just as the black table was sort of a survival mechanism in, you know, a largely white environment, this was the same sort of thing we had to do, a lot of us still have to do, when operating in mostly white environments. You sort of adopt a non-angry persona, is probably the best way I could describe it at the moment. You behave as though things are fine, even though you know that behind the mask, you still have a lot of issues, you still have a lot of problems, you still have a lot of things that you would like to come out but wouldn't necessarily come out because it's a matter of survival. You have to work every day, you have to pay bills, you have to navigate through this environment in which more often than not you're the minority, and it's much more difficult to do if you don't have that mask on, if you let people see that you're it's still, even now it's still hard to describe, if you let that anger show through, if you let what some may call your authentic self be realized, it tends to make white people a little bit uncomfortable. It might even make other black people uncomfortable, and before you know it, you've got a whole other set of issues to deal with.
And Barack Obama is specifically not running as a candidate of protest, a la Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton. He's running, he says, a post-racial, but you can't avoid the issue.
You can't, and it's wholly optimistic for him to try, and it's wholly optimistic for a lot of Americans to believe that it's not going to be an issue, but already it has. It's come into the forefront in a quite significant way in the last few weeks, and even coming into South Carolina, it's going to be an issue. He is running on a campaign of unity. We're all in this together, as opposed to, I'm black, you're white, you've got to vote for me because I've got great ideas, or playing some sort of a racial paradigm into it. It's been all about, his campaign's been all about unity.
And you also wrote interestingly about yourself having a foot in both camps, this facility that let other people say, perhaps patronizingly, gee, you're not like the other guys. And at the same time, you know, with, you're obviously black too and sat at the black table. And for so many years, you saw that as something that tore you apart.
It did, and it's still an issue in a lot of ways today, not because I'm a tortured artist or tortured individual, but this is something that you tend to think about if you think, and if you try to get beyond your own existence into the, you know, seeing the larger picture. I mean, why have we as a black people had so many struggles, but yet and still I've been able to accomplish what I've accomplished? Well, certainly it was due to, in large part, to my predecessors, my ancestors, the people before me, but also, what is it about where I am and what I'm doing, and is there a measure of inauthenticity that you tend to question if you make it and you see so many other people who aren't, and you wonder why that might be.
And it's clearly portrayed as an asset in the Obama election, but he's not from the same place you are.
No, he's not. He's from... We're from places similar in that he and I both have experiences moving about the country and around the world. My dad was in the Air Force. We moved all over the place every 2 years. My family was my nucleus, but we were having experiences outside of the world in largely white environments. It was white schools. It was white neighbors. It was white playmates. And Senator Obama is literally biracial, where I grew up culturally biracial.
Mm-hmm. And have of late, come to see it as a real strength.
It is. It one has to be authentic. You have to be who you are.
Yes.
And this is who I am. And in order to sort of reconcile it and use it to my advantage and see it not as a liability and avoid driving myself completely crazy, instead of only partially, you sort of have to work with what you're given. Most people are able to do that.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. We're talking with Joe Williams, who's deputy chief of the Boston Globe's Washington Bureau. And if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email us is talk@npr.org. And we'll start with Judy. Judy calling us from Des Moines, Iowa.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. This is a very interesting conversation. I attended the Democratic caucuses here in Des Moines, and I ended up caucusing for Obama. It was a struggle whether it should be Hillary or Obama, but one of the things I was struck with in my caucus was there were almost no black people. It's in a very white area of a suburb of Des Moines, but the Obama caucus had great diversity in terms of both young and old, men and women, and the non-whites that were there were in the Obama caucus, and that would be largely people of Indian or Pakistani descent or some Orientals. They were almost exclusively in the Obama camp, and I found that very interesting.
Yeah, and I've also heard some people, as opposed to what happened in New Hampshire, saying in Des Moines, in Iowa, where there are caucuses, and you have to stand up and say, I'm for Obama or I'm for Clinton or I'm for, well, those days you could say you're for Joe Biden. Do you think that made a difference in terms of people forced to get up and make their declaration in public?
Well, it is. It's very public. The room was divided among those, you know, you sat in different areas. And I didn't sense that there was any animosity within the room. There was just great pride. And also within the Obama camp, there was just so much enthusiasm. I didn't detect that quite as much in the other camps, although the Biden camp was pretty enthusiastic about what they did. But there was just an underlying and, for me, unexpected real enthusiasm there. And then I just wanted to make one other comment about the whole issue that's come up with the Clinton remarks about Dr. King and President Johnson. And I guess I believe both are true, that there was a dream, but it did require political action. And so instead of trying to divide on the issue, I would like to say, you know, both are true, not one exclusive of the other. And I would hope that people wouldn't try to exploit it one way or the other.
Judy, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. You're on the opinion page on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Joe Williams, I just wanted to follow up with Judy's call with you on that. I was wondering, is it possible to see this beyond, as she suggests, the racial issue?
It's possible, but the racial issue just keeps coming back. I mean, it's going to be incredibly difficult to avoid. There have already been a lot of parsing out about what Hillary Clinton said, what she meant, what Bill Clinton said when he referred to Obama's war stance as a quote-unquote fairy tale, mm-hmm. and how people took offense to that. The campaign is running on unity, and a lot of people of color may have the same sort of ideas that he does, but it's going to be very, very difficult to separate the fact that a lot of people who have these ideas who are of color are going to join with him, and a lot of people who are not of color but still believe the same thing are going to head up in the same way.
Now let's talk to Mark. Mark's with us from Silver Lake in Ohio.
Terrific show and a very important topic, but I think that maybe the success of Obama's run for the nomination, and who knows, maybe his election, tells me that race might not be the issue that we think it is. Maybe we're just finally starting to outgrow this. I mean, we're talking about the two leading Democratic candidates being a woman and an American of color. This is an extraordinary thing, but I don't think that people are supporting Obama because he's the first black man. This is very exciting. I think maybe the issue of color simply is not playing as big a role as we think it is. We're just so used to it being a role that we're talking about it as if it's still the 1980s or the 1990s. When I'm from originally from Cleveland, and when Carl Stokes was elected mayor, this was an extraordinary event. I don't see the extraordinary nature of Obama's candidacy in the same light. I think maybe we are starting to grow up as a nation. That was my comment. I just wanted to put in my two cents, and I'm delighted you're talking about this.
Thanks, Mark.
Be well.
Well, I think that he's got a point, but the point only goes so far. I mean, we have progressed to the point where a man like Senator Obama can even be considered a legitimate candidate, but it's got to be a certain type of black person, and that was the point that I was trying to make in my piece. He is what might be termed as he certainly is an extraordinary man, but in racial terms, he is almost extra racial. He has to transcend his race. You could argue the same for Jesse Jackson, that he was an extraordinary man. Certainly Shirley Chisholm back in the 60s when she decided to run. Or 70s, I guess it was. But they're all extraordinary people who have accomplished a great deal in their lifetimes, but still they could not get over a certain hump. And Barack Obama is over that hump, but whether he can make it all the way down remains to be seen, because there still are. It's difficult to overlook what happened in New Hampshire, where the polls were so wrong. But on the same token, you can argue, I guess I'm arguing against myself here, but you could argue that the success of a governor like Deval Patrick
in Massachusetts,
a mostly white state, hasn't had a black statewide office holder in years, probably
since
ever.
Ed Brooke
was the last senator to represent Massachusetts. And he won by a decisive margin. And that probably was because the Republican Party was in such disarray. But certainly his abilities as a politician and his message had a lot to do with it.
Let's see if we get one more caller in. And this is Kennendale. I hope I have that right, in Waterloo, Iowa.
No, it's Keyondale. But I don't think I deliver to a lot of small white towns around Iowa for my job. And I see nothing but Obama signs. And I don't think it really has anything to do with him being black. They like what he's talking about, you know. I even had a coworker mention that he's not going to vote for Obama, and he didn't know that I was standing around. He said that he's not going to vote for Obama because he's too young, you know. So I haven't heard anything about color, about him being black, because whether he's a light-skinned black man or not, people still see you as black.
But getting back to Joe Williams' point, do you think that that would be the same if he was saying the same things, but saying them much more in an angry way, maybe the way that John Edwards, for example, characterizes a lot of his statements?
No. No.
Hello?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks very much. Keyondale, and I'm sorry for mispronouncing the name. And I guess that's your point. If this was an angry black man, I think you're saying a lot more people would have problems with it.
You take John Edwards' words and put them in Barack Obama's mouth, or in the mouth of any other African American politician, and you would have an entirely different reaction, I posit. I think that to get as far as he has to get, he almost has to ignore his race and put out a message that has nothing to do with his race, and certainly put his race on the back burner. And that runs the risk of alienating a lot of African Americans. We can see it. We'll be seeing a real test of it in South Carolina, I believe, because his message there is going to be a lot earthier is the only word that comes to mind. But it's going to be a lot more African-American sounding. He's going to have a harder edge to his rhetoric, I believe. And it remains to be seen whether or not it will resonate. I think it will.
Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Joseph Williams is Deputy Chief of the Boston Globe's Washington Bureau. He joined us here in Studio 3. If you'd like to read his op-ed, you can take a look at our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.